Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone and welcome to Pixels, a show about the gaming industry and games in general, where we try to comment on all of this with a little bit of analysis and try to see what's beyond the news. That sounds like a 24 hours news network slogan. Reach beyond the news. That lovely laughter you're hearing is that of James, who's with me again for this show. Welcome back, James.
Thanks, Patrick. How are you? How was your Easter? That kind of stuff.
It was nice. It was nice. A few people might have heard on other shows that my dad wasn't feeling great. And thanks to the wonders of modern medicine, he's a lot better. He's back to full speed almost. So it was a great Easter gift.
That's awesome.
The resurrection of my dad. How was your Easter, James?
It was nice. Yeah, got my family back together. First time back in the UK for a while. The whole family got together. It's like, I think maybe the whole family down in the southeast, maybe 10 of us together. First time in maybe 10 years that has happened. It was really
so
cool.
The question that comes to my mind immediately is, was there any big drama, family drama, during the Easter weekend where everyone's cooked up for 3 days? Did you manage to... No, you don't do that in your family?
I can't think of... I mean, my grandmother is kind of losing it a little bit, so I would maybe say there, but nothing major, I don't think, no.
Okay. I have to say, we don't have dramas in my family either. I guess we have sane... We're one of the few people with sane families.
Yeah.
So. All right, but we're not here to talk about Easter or our families. We're here to talk about video games.
We are.
And there was a Nintendo Direct last week, which we're going to go into details about in a little bit here. But then there's also a number of different pieces of news. One related to Nintendo with Angry Joe, who's a YouTuber who's had it with Nintendo's policy, which I want to discuss. There's a number of other things. Mobius Final Fantasy, which is a mobile game I had never really paid attention to, or if I'm honest, been, you know, heard about until now. I want to talk about that, a bunch of other things, and then a bunch of delays and other announcements that we'll get into as well. But for now, Nintendo Direct. Are you ready to bask into the awesomeness of Nintendo and Satoru Iwata?
I am.
And let's go. Nintendo Direct are always a little bit weird, but I've come to like them for what they are. Initially, I was, you know, belittling Nintendo for that strange custom and weird video production value and all of that, but now it's kind of almost endearing.
Yeah, it's kind of cute, kind of just, you know, let's sit down with Iwata and find out what Nintendo are doing.
Yeah, it's really, it feels very intimate, actually.
That's it does, absolutely, weird. Yeah.
So, a bunch of things that they announced. First of all, Nintendo 64 and DS titles are coming to the Wii U virtual console for about $10. I think that's a little bit expensive, but they have a good deal for people who already owned those titles on the Wii virtual console. They can buy them again, but for only $2. It feels like an okay price for a game that had to have a little bit more development to adapt to the new console.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not outraged by that, the fact people have to pay again for the same game?
I mean, considering that the Wii U gamepad is so different to the Wii, I can understand having to pay a little bit for them to have... They've obviously done some work on porting those games, so I don't feel outraged by that, I don't think, no.
Yeah, it feels like a couple of... It's, if anything, it's the $10 for that game, which seems excessive, whereas the two to buy it again seems, to me at least, reasonable. But.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hmm.
Mario Maker, are you looking forward to Mario Maker?
Yes, I think I'm looking forward to what people are going to do with it. I mean, I don't think I'll make anything with it because I'm not that kind of person. but I'm looking forward to people making the whole of Mario, Super Mario Brothers again in Mario Maker, that kind of thing.
It's for those who don't know, Mario Maker is a game where you can create your own Mario levels, and you can switch between all the different aesthetics of all the different Mario games, from Super Mario Bros. 1, Brothers 1, to basically New Super Mario Brothers Wii. I think the big challenge, so it's going to be available in September. We finally have a solid date. And I think the big challenge for Nintendo is going to be to keep the levels from being completely overridden with giant penises everywhere. But
What was the other? I think that, what was it? There was something that they did the same kind of thing with. There was another Nintendo game which came off the DS and Wii U earlier last year, which did the same kind of thing. And I think they basically said, just do whatever you want with it.
Really?
I think so.
That doesn't sound very Nintendo-like.
It doesn't. But now that I'm saying it.
I'm sure there is a reporting system, and there may be, but yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to that one. I guess like you, I'm probably not going to sit down and create incredible Mario levels, but it does feel a little bit like it's going to be used mainly to create impossible levels. What they were showing in it were like these crazy difficult levels with 15 different cannons and, you know, flying Koopas everywhere, and it was I'm curious, but I'm wondering if it's a case where the idea is actually cooler than the implementation, not the implementation, but the actual result.
I think I'd agree with that. The idea of being able to make own Mario levels is definitely something cool for people that have grown up on Mario, but I don't think it's good. I think it's definitely this is going to the Mario fans. This is a nostalgia thing. We want you to make your own Super Mario Brothers game, but it's not going, it's not like this is the next Mario project. I think it's very much a niche thing they're going for there.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I've been saying for months now that Nintendo's games are the best they've ever been, and their game design prowess is unparalleled, and not everyone can, you know, what makes Nintendo games good is not the fact that they have a Mario level editor, it's their game design skills. So not everyone has those skills. But you know what? Maybe we see incredible things with mods and the indie scene in general, and
that's
things
true.
Like Minecraft, and you know, so maybe we'll see incredible things on Mario Maker as well.
It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't say that I expect to see them, but it's definitely something that could happen.
Mario Kart 8 is seeing a couple of updates. One we were expecting, it's the DLC Pack 2, the Animal Crossing DLC Pack, which will get, you know, racers, vehicles, courses, all of that. And the Mario Park Kart, not Mario Park, which is different things, has been acclaimed for being an excellent value for DLC. It was, I believe, maybe not the very first time Nintendo dove into DLC, but at least the first major time.
Yeah.
And for $8, you get a very decent amount of content. The 8 courses, for example, alone are worth a good chunk of money. And it's coming a little bit earlier than we expected, April 23rd. So as I was saying, for $8 in the US, and there are more amiibos compatible, whatever. I'm not, you know, it's not my jam. But there's another side to the update, which surprised me quite a bit. It's the fact that you get, you know, it's the kind of announcement that is pretty silly when you think of it. You're like, but why didn't they do it sooner? But then it's at the same time, it's pretty brilliant because it adds a lot to the game. The free upgrade is the new class, so the new speed of karts for everyone. As people who've ever played Mario Mario Kart know, you have the 50cc, 100cc, and 150cc's. The first one being pretty easy and welcoming to beginners and to casual players. The last one being fairly quick, and you have to be very good to be able to navigate that you know, the kart in that class. So they're adding the 200cc class, which is, I think it's probably going to be really, really hard. But it adds a lot to the game, right? It's a decent update for everyone.
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely then pushing in the direction of maybe more competitive Mario Kart. Because, yeah. I mean, 200cc is definitely fast. And I read somewhere there's them saying, like, maybe they're testing to see how people react to super high-speed racing in the hopes of maybe testing waters for an F-Zero game.
Huh.
Which would be
cool. That would be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you've ever played Mario Kart at 50cc, it means it's not the real game. Like, 150cc is where it's at.
Absolutely, so. Yeah.
And I thought it was very cool that they would do it for free. You know, they could easily have made it part of the DLC pack or something, but it revitalizes the game, I think, for those who love it. So, more amiibos, the Yoshi yarn for Yoshi's Woolly World. There's a yarn version of an amiibo. I've said a few times what I think about the amiibos, so I'm not going to get back into it. But there's a home improvement aspect to the amiibo universe with amiibo cards for Animal Crossing. So I guess if you're into that, I bought Animal Crossing and I didn't get into it. But
yeah, some people played, I think, half a week of it and I said, this is going to be a full-time job. And I stopped.
So you don't get it either? I think there's a few of us who don't.
Yeah.
And I try to be very discreet when I say this because I think I usually get mauled by the Animal Crossing fans who are like, you just don't get it. It's brilliant. And I mean, I really don't get it.
It seems like it's like The Sims, you know? I think you have to be in a certain set of mind where you want to manage a life that's not your own. Like, you're just doing everything I do in Animal Crossing, I could do for myself, and I could do it, and it'd be more productive, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that games have to be productive. I'm just saying that it feels like I'm doing everyday stuff.
Yeah, and some people love it.
Yeah.
I'm just not one of them, I guess.
No, me neither.
So that Amiibo tap, I have to say just a few words about it. The Amiibo tap is you can tap an Amiibo on the Nintendo Wii U and you get a video clip of an old Nintendo game at random. It's not like one Amiibo will give you that clip. And it feels like adding functions to that Amiibo thing so that it doesn't lose relevance too quickly, but I don't understand the point of it either. It's almost like Animal Crossing. Maybe someone, you know, if you're a listener and you see the point of this, Animal Crossing, I know some people love it, but the Amiibo tap, seeing a 30-second or 2 minutes clip of an old Nintendo game, the greatest hits, by tapping your Amiibo on your controller, what?
Isn't Why? It gameplay, though, as opposed to video clips? Isn't it like 3 minute snippets of game?
Right, sorry. I mean, it is games, but you're not playing the game. You're just watching a video, right?
Oh, is that? Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'm wrong. Okay. Maybe you get, in that case, it would make sense. I guess I didn't.
Yeah. According
understand.
To the Polygon article, it says you cannot play the entire game due to a time limit, but another tap of the amiibo will enable you to try another highlighted scene in the game.
Oh, okay. In that case, I will take back what I just said. In that case, it is kind of sort of fun. You tap the thing and you get a 3 minute bit of an old game that maybe you liked. Okay, I can see that. It's like a random jukebox. Of,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I think it would be nice if it wasn't randomized sections of the game. Actually, saying that, now I realize why they're doing it. It's like, say my Mega Man guy on it has Mega Man 2, then I touch it and it takes me to fight Metal Man, and that's three minutes of that game, and I'm like, oh, that was fun. Let's try another randomized section.
I think we're not great at this. I thought it was random games for every amiibo.
You are correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Games
so you just design. Get a random game,
yeah.
And for 3 minutes. Okay, that's it's cute. It's definitely not a system, you know, an Amiibo seller for me still.
No, me neither.
I'm not a friend of the Amiibos, but sure, why not? You've got them lying around.
Yeah.
Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem. That's sort of a niche thing.
Yes.
But there was a teaser for that game, and they're both very well-known, especially in Japan, RPGs, and I mean Fire Emblem is an turn-based strategy game, and Shin Megami Tensei is an RPG. The reason I wanted to mention it is that something struck me when I saw that trailer, which is that teaser, which is pretty cool. You know, it's anime style, as usual with Japanese games. It looks pretty cool. The thing that I noticed, though, was that that game, as others, takes place in Japan, in contemporary Japan, in Tokyo. And I was struck by the fact that a lot of Japanese games do, from the same series, Persona. Persona is actually a side series from Shin Megami Tensei. They're also in modern-day Japan. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that Western games, I don't think I could put my finger on any Western game that takes place in actual present-time reality in the West. And I don't know. That difference struck me. It's weird to think that we don't have that, and the Japanese do. But do we have games that take place in, you know, the UK or the US?
I mean, apart from GTA, I can't think of anything either. And I don't even know if I'd say GTA counts, because that's in a super like glammed up satirical world, isn't it?
Yeah,
I honestly can't think of anything. No, that's an interesting point.
Hmm. Because I'd love to see that. I'd love to have a game that takes place in, you know, in Paris or...
Yeah. I mean, I guess racing games, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, it's kind of different. I mean, those games, you actually... Part of the appeal of those Shin Megami Tensei games is the fact that you are sort of in a slightly different version of the real world and social... Not even social, but the not the universe. I don't even know how to put it. The setting is the real world, and you're right. In GTA, even though it is satirical, it's completely satirical. It's you never feel like it feels like a realistic place, but it doesn't feel like Los Angeles.
No.
It's not even, you know, it's Los Santos, it's Liberty City, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's never supposed to be the real place. So
yeah. It's interesting. I'm going to do some more reading about that.
Maybe, you know, again, dear listener, if you can think of a game that has a contemporary Western setting that was created in the West. And actually that in Japan, I think it started with Shenmue, for those who remember those Dreamcast games when, James, I'm guessing you were still a wee toddler.
I've heard of them. I've never played them.
Shenmue was, I think, 2000, maybe 99, maybe even earlier. It was Dreamcast.
Okay.
And so you were fairly young. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know why my voice went up like this. But talking about Fire Emblem, Fire Emblem IF, the 3DS version, was shown again with a trailer. It's for the fans of Fire Emblem, I'm sure they're very eager to see that new version. It's you create the main character for once. You're not a side character in the main story or a companion character. You are the main character, and you have to choose sides. And choosing sides will be a key portion of the game, and you will not have the same experience depending on which side you choose. And once you make that choice, it's final. And if I understand correctly, you will have the ability to buy a DLC that would let you relive the campaign through the other side, which I have mixed feelings about. But the game is coming in America in 2016 at some point. And by America, I mean the West. I'm sure they will do that too.
I'm excited for this. So my first Fire Emblem game was Fire Emblem Awakening, which I really enjoyed.
Came out last year, right?
I think 2013, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah, 2013. It's fun. And I'm excited. I'm really excited for more.
So do you play it super hardcore with when you die, you're dead?
First time through, I didn't because I didn't want that to put me off it. But when I went through the second time, I did because I wanted a little bit more of that challenge.
Hmm.
So same kind of way as I play XCOM, that kind of thing.
Hmm. So you see the value in that tension and stress of making sure you don't lose a single character. And do you like restart? You can't even restart, right? It saves all the time.
Yeah. It saves all the time. So I wouldn't say I take the value in the stress. I take the value from when I do it well. That feeling when you actually succeed and you do fantastically is so good that it drives from the, the stress is there for sure, but the reward part of it is what's great about it.
Mm.
It's coming out on top.
It's interesting. I think it's a discussion we've had quite a bit with Bloodborne coming out, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But I don't seem to get that. I'm very curious about that aspect of the joy that some people get out of those games. But
sure,
we've said a few times that the very punishing aspect of games has been around, especially when you had arcade games.
Yeah.
But it seems the more I read about it and hear about it, the more it seems that in the case of the Souls series and Bloodborne, it's not really a hard game for the sake of being hard. It's not like the comparison or the reflection I've heard about a lot is comparing it to Super Meat Boy, where it's impossibly hard, but it's like actual physical skills that you have to have the skill with your fingers to jump right at the right time, and maybe even something Miami.
Hotline,
yes, thank you. I was going to say Death Call Miami. I like that name too.
I do too.
Death Call Miami. But yeah, Hotline Miami, it's kind of the same. You're going to die and you're going to try a million times. In those games, possibly Fire Emblem as well, if you do things the right way and if you're being clever about the way you approach things, you're not going to die. It's just about being careful and attentive to what's happening, right?
Yeah, so I'm playing through Dark Souls for the first time at the moment, actually, and it is that kind of thing. It's like you really feel whenever you die, it's not because the game has been unfair. It's because you've made a mistake and you can move onwards from that mistake from learning. That's what I get from those games, is that I made a mistake, I can go back in, I can learn what I did wrong, and I can improve.
So yeah, right. So you know why you died. You know you made the mistake and you know you're responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
For that mistake. It's not like, I guess it's the same in those very hard, twitchy, arcadey games like Super Meat Boy or Hotline Miami, but it's like, even when you know what you have to do, you're not always capable of doing them.
Yes.
Whereas, right, that's the difference, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I do think Hotline Miami and Super Meat Boy are things that if you put enough practice into, you can get, but also that they're a very different type of difficulty. I actually think that Hotline Miami is a little bit like it's made hard for the sake of being hard, as opposed to Super Meat Boy, which is it's made to be hard to be rewarding.
Okay. It's kind of a murky murky concept to navigate, which type of difficulty is punishing or, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially when you're looking across different types of games like platformers and then RPGs and turn-based strategies, there's so many different things that can go into it that it can be such like a little muddy world to get into.
Yeah. Well, so Bloodborne, since we're talking about it, last time, we'll get back to Nintendo in a second, but last time I was saying that I really didn't get what the point of it was, even with all the promos and all the previews and everyone talking about it. And since then, it's been released. And I think I've rarely seen such raving reviews about a game. Everyone says it's a truly excellent incarnation of that series. And so I'm waving the white flag as a good French person, and I'm actually gonna get it. It's coming. It's getting here tomorrow. I ordered it.
Oh, cool.
So I'm gonna get it, and we'll see what happens. And I guess I'll report on the feeling. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I also pre-ordered Mortal Kombat X. Ooh. By the way. So I've broken down for these two. Back to the Nintendo Direct. Attack on Titan. Have you ever watched that anime?
I have, yes. Yeah.
What do you think of it? I'm not going to say what I think of it, but...
So I'll start off by saying I'm not the biggest anime fan. I've only watched like 3 or 4 series. I do like the idea, but I haven't watched a whole lot. I think it's all right. I think it's very much... one of those things is like The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, like everyone you like is going to die. So when you go into it, it's like, you know, you understand that. And I don't think it was very, I think that maybe kind of detached from the series a bit. I think it was okay. I don't know. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I wouldn't say I hated it either. It was all right.
Mm. Yeah, I think I had the same, my expectations were high because it's super popular. If you haven't, if you've never heard about Attack on Titan, it's one of the most popular anime from the past. I think it started 3 or 4 years ago. It really gained a lot of steam in the past couple, 3 years. And it's one of the most popular anime there is. So my expectations were really high. And it's not that it was bad. It's that I thought it didn't... It asked so many questions and answered so few of them, at least in... I guess I watched the first season or the first series. And I was frustrated that it didn't... Because the world they're building is interesting. There's a lot of... I think I would, in some respects... compare it to the paramount example of asking questions and not answering them, which is the TV series Lost.
Yeah, I can see that, sure.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So I felt the same kind of frustration there. But anyway, so it's coming out as a game called Humanity in Chains, and it's got a solo campaign, but I think the main element of it is a local or online co-op game. Mm-hmm. And it's released in May. And for people who love the anime, I'm guessing they're interested, and not many other people will be. But
yeah, I was actually, when I was watching it, I thought that it looked just like Monster Hunter, which
is
interesting because that there's no other games like that, is there? It's interesting to see that Monster Hunter has reached that point of success that other people are making Monster Hunter-esque games.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of Monster Hunter clones.
Oh, is there?
Oh yeah, there is. There's.
I guess there's Dragon's Dogma, kind of.
There's a ton of them. There's Dragon's. I can't remember if Dragon's Dogma is one of them, but Tokiden, I think. There's the thing Delta, God Eater. There's. I mean, they're not very popular in the West.
Okay.
Some of them came out, but there's at least 5 of them, and I'm blanking on all of them now, but.
I had no idea.
And it's. I mean, Monster Hunter is only now gaining a little bit of popularity in the West. It's been known for a long time, but not a lot of people have been playing it. And with Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, some people are getting interested. But it's, you know, it's kind of one of those games. Almost the difficulty is yet another. It's obtuse. It's an obtuse game, and by everyone's account, you have to put in like 10 hours into the game to start getting into it and getting something back. And
Not for me.
Yeah, not for me either. I've tried it because it's the people who love it talk about it with such love and such passion. I was thinking, I want some of that. You know, I want to experience that. And I tried a few times the demos and the ones where people were saying, well, this one is a little bit easier. It's still Monster Hunter, but it's, you know, easier to get into, and still it didn't. Did you try Monster Hunter?
I haven't yet. I do think I'm going to go pick it up. But I think it's one of those games that I want to make sure I have people to play it with first.
Yes.
And then pick it up. Same with like something like Armor or something that's so niche and hardcore. I want to have those that support network to play with before I go in, because I know that if I buy it and I don't have that, I won't enjoy the game.
I think that might be an issue. One of the reasons why I'm not enjoying those games as much, because in my old age, I don't really have many friends who still play. I mean, I could find people to play with, but it's never at the right time. It's never super convenient, and so I end up playing mostly alone. Which is why I was convinced that I would enjoy Mortal Kombat X or 10, because it's got a very big focus on the single player campaign. So maybe that's part of the reason. Playing Monster Hunter like games alone is not as fun, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Puzzle and Dragons Z and Super Mario Edition are coming out for $30 on May 22nd, but in only a few weeks you'll be able to try the demo on April 30th. Have you ever played Puzzle and Dragons? It's come out on mobile devices in the West, I think, a year ago, maybe.
Yeah. It's a Kinect 5 game, Kinect 3. I don't remember what the genre.
Kinect, however much you can.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's all right. I was actually the person I was watching this with. We spoke about it, and I would definitely pick this up over the iOS version, if I'm going to be totally honest.
The thing is, it's the 3DS version is pay once, whereas the iOS version is very much exactly. So.
Yeah, it's not a free to play game. It's the iOS version is a free to play game. You
exactly
have to pay for energy and stuff. Well, this is a
I think I'm definitely going to try the demo. It's the kind of little thing. You know, I've had a weird inkling for free-to-play games recently. It's very strange. Not even, you know, the good free-to-play games where you can think that, you know, the MOBAs or those, like, the weird little iOS games. I've downloaded Summoner Wars on iOS, which is this mix between Pokemon and Candy Crush Saga almost. It's a Pokemon-like game, but it's written with the most horrendous, not the most horrendous, but pretty horrendous free-to-play reminders and pop-ups. And I'm not really playing it. I gave up. But then I saw we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I saw the ad for Clash of Clans with Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
And I reinstalled Clash of Clans, and I'm like, I might want to play it a little bit. I don't know why. I don't even like those games all that much, but they're just a little bit easy, a little bit mindless. I don't know.
There's something about getting that notification saying like, hey, your city's ready. To be like, oh, yay, my city. It's kind of like, it's that little like addiction to push notifications saying, hey, you did something good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you totally.
And actually, the asynchronous aspect of it, I also adore. It relates probably to the fact that I don't have people to play with anymore or less. I don't have to be there to do the multiplayer thing. So you set up your base and then it gets attacked, or then you attack someone else's base who was set up, but you don't have to be connected at the same time. Of course, I get those experiences as well in other ways. I mean, I've been playing Hearthstone like crazy and other games as well, but there's something more relaxing about the asynchronous, which, by the way, I've always thought that the Street Pass aspect of the 3DS was one of the most genius and under-celebrated aspect of the 3DS. It's a wonderful addition to the mobile gaming tool set. And they've added new Street Pass games. One of them is a fishing game called Ultimate Angler. And another one is zombie thing called Battleground Z. Available. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say Battleground Z is the most unoriginal name for a zombie game I've ever heard.
Well, it is a Street Pass game, so Mii's running around, but it's true. Ultimate Angler is not, you know, the height of originality either.
That's true.
And so they have a Mii Plaza Premium DLC, so it's a VIP thing. I don't really know. I guess some people spend a lot of time on the Mii Plaza on their 3DS. I do a little bit, but it can become sort of an entire game unto itself. Maybe, you know what? Maybe that's one of the core elements of their mobile offering that's coming in a year or so. The Mi Plaza kind of easy little games, and you get street passes, which you can do now with a lot of mobile phones. So,
yeah. And I reckon that, and going back to what we were talking about Animal Crossing earlier, I reckon that's the same kind of crew. People like Animal Crossing and the Mi Plaza and Tamagotchi Life, which I totally forgot was a thing.
Yeah, it's little maintenance games.
Yeah.
It's not even like gameplay games, it's maintenance. It's that aspect of the thing that is appealing.
And you know what? Now you've said that, it's the same kind of thrill that I was saying about getting those push notifications and going in and attending the village. Different ways of getting it, but the same kind of thing. It's like you have this set, like 10 minutes where you go and take care of your village, or you go and take care of your Animal Crossing house.
And I think with the Street Pass, the thing that's really cool about it is that you know it's a real person behind that notification. You sort of, and they've done it pretty well with the regions and the, you know, the different locations you get people from. Mm-hmm. And I like the knowledge that you've come across someone from whatever, you know, Japan or Korea or the other side of the world or Montreal. And you're like, at some point during my day, during the last couple of hours, I walked by someone who came from there and who had their 3DS in their pocket. There's a weird feeling of community that emanates from this.
Yeah, it's super cool taking them to conventions with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's and I, you know, I'm curious why more people, more manufacturers haven't taken advantage of that concept. It feels to me like this is a gold mine of gameplay, not even gameplay, but game design waiting to be unlocked. But anyway, those games will be available on April 16, and they'll cost $5 each, which seems like
a lot of money.
But
yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people who play Clash of Clans or those horrible things probably paid more money.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else you want to mention about the Nintendo Direct?
I can't think of anything. I will say that I thought Splatoon looks like fun. And that Yoshi's Woolly World looks like fun as well. But apart from that, not really anything. It kind of felt like the stuff they were saying, while it seemed really good, I didn't think there was anything super amazing that stood out to me. But it was fun, and I do think that I'm looking forward to some of the stuff that's coming out from them this year.
Okay. There are a bunch of indie things like Octodad and Don't Starve, not together. It's just the Giant Edition coming to Wii U. And Box Boy looks like a weird platform puzzler, which you might be interested in.
Like the game I used to play on my calculator, which was it was called like Box Guy or something, and it was very similar.
Maybe it's inspired because
maybe.
Box Guy and Box Boy.
Yeah.
There's a new Fatal Frame, Yoshi's Woolly World, as you said, and Mewtwo is coming to Super Smash Brothers, and Lucas, and there's a bunch of, you know, it's DLC as well, and you can buy it individually for each version of the game, or you can buy it at a quote-unquote reduced price. That's kind of the more, slightly more shady side of the Nintendo DLC. As good as they are with Mario Kart, I'm not as happy with the fact that, I mean, just give it to both versions for one price.
I think if you own both Wii U and 3DS versions of the game, you get Mewtwo for free, actually.
Oh, that's right. That's right. For a certain amount of time. Or you can buy it, or maybe Lucas you get. Yeah, it's, I think it's, you pay for it if you own, if you buy it later, but in the beginning you get Mewtwo for free.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's just the idea that, at least for Lucas, the other character, I think it's Lucas, you know, the fact that you can, right, so the fighter, I'm reading the article, it's available on either platform for $4 or on both for $5. So it's just $1, but just for that, So if you had registered both versions of the game before March 31st, you'll get Mewtwo early on both versions for free. So, you know, that's cool. But it's just that the fact you pay for it, if you bought Super Smash Bros. On 3DS and on Wii U, you know, you already proved your allegiance to you know, the Nintendo gods for a hefty amount of money. I don't see how having you shell out an extra buck to get your character that you're, you know, buying already, to get it on the other version of the game that you're also playing anyway, I don't see how that is viable from a commercial. Well, commercial, of course, you're getting an extra buck if you're Nintendo, but I think it's a little bit of a sore feeling when you have to pay for it, right?
Although, while I agree with that, I also think that if I only owned it on the 3DS and I was paying the same price for a character which I wasn't going to get access to, if that makes sense, I might be a little bit sore as well. I think both sides should be sore.
Okay, so I guess you're saying if you only have one version, you're allowed to pay just, you know, a buck less for getting the character on the version you own.
Yeah.
Okay, that's I could see that. I'm not convinced, but I hear your argument. It makes sense. Okay. All right. Enough with Nintendo. Let's talk about other things. Oh, wait. Still Nintendo. there's a pretty famous YouTuber called Angry Joe who posted a rant about a takedown he got for a video he made of Mario Party. And Mario Party 10, which he paid for and all of that, got taken down because it's, you know, Nintendo's horrendous YouTuber, you know, YouTube policy. He's got about 2 million subscribers, so he's a pretty big deal. And he explained that he was sick of this and he, you know, he basically yelled at Nintendo for wanting to monetize the free advertising that he's doing for them. And after he has already paid a lot of money to get the game and the console and the controllers and all of that. And, while I agree with it, so let me ask you, what did you think of this? I have reservations and mixed feelings about this, but what did you think of his outburst?
So I think that he is I fully agree that he should be able to say, like, hey, putting up copyright claims and is, especially doesn't go with fair use, that's kind of messed up. But then I also agree that Nintendo should have the right to say, hey, we don't really want you using our stuff. I think, especially considering that's a copyright strike on his, if he had chosen to leave it up, that would be a copyright strike on his YouTube account hurting.
Yeah.
I don't know whose side I'd be on. I think I agree with him, but it's murky, it's muddy, without knowing what's going on.
So the thing that I have reservations about, So I think he also admits and, you know, says very clearly, whatever, Nintendo, it's your right. You can do whatever you want. It's completely, from a legal standpoint, it's fine. But he insists a lot on the fact that he is providing free advertisement and, you know, recommendations on Nintendo's behalf, which is completely accurate. And this is why all of the other companies are choosing not to exercise their arguably right to take down videos of gameplay. And he's likening it to the idea that Nintendo would ask him for money when he would tell his friends, hey, you should try this game, it's really cool. He was like, and then I have to turn around and give a buck to Nintendo for making that recommendation. So I understand his frustration and why he would see it like that. However, and not only do I understand it, I absolutely think Nintendo's policy on this is horrendous. And I think they're hurting themselves like nobody's business with this policy.
Yes.
However, what he never mentions once about this whole affair is that he is actually making money on that content he's producing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Nintendo is coming and saying, hey, if you want to advertise our game, I mean, it's not like he's not making money, I guess is my point. He's mm-hmm. using Nintendo's property and providing visibility and advertising and all of this, but he's also making money. And what Nintendo sure. is saying, we want a cut of that money that you're getting for creating content that you could not have created without our work. And their way of doing it, I think, is detrimental, very clumsy, but on a theoretical standpoint, I think it's completely understandable that they are yes. saying, we want a cut of that. Now, it gets even murkier because they have that weird creators partner program where yes. for some games you can create content and get a, you know, they get a cut and you get a bigger cut of the advertising revenue. But some of the games are excluded from that program, and it's mm-hmm. the case of Mario Party 10. Basically, all of the big games, they get all the money anyway. So yeah. I think there is definitely some, at least some tuning, if not some, you know, some having Nintendo listen to reason in all of this. But again, I really wanted to point out the fact that he never, I think it's because he doesn't really understand it himself. He is making money with this. So it's not as unfair as he's putting it that Nintendo is asking for a cut of that money.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. In theory, it makes sense why they're upset, why Nintendo's upset. It's like, hey, we're making stuff, you're using it, we think we deserve a little bit of cash. But then I would say that they're getting advertising out of it. They're getting, I would say that it should balance out. I do yeah. think there's definitely some. Well, I think there needs to be some actual legal stuff which says this is how this works, and because it's all very wishy-washy right now.
Yeah.
And also, I think that Nintendo and YouTubers need to understand how they affect each other properly.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, the case of Let's Play videos is very murky because in the case of a review or, you know, an opinion piece, it's, I think there's no question that this is a fair use,
mm-hmm.
a fair use of the game. If you're going to comment on it or review it, of course you need to be able to use footage from the game. A Let's Play video is not comment or anything. It's just you playing the game as it is. So
yeah.
It doesn't sound like commentary, the cases of fair use, you know, transformative work mm-hmm. or commentary, all of those. It doesn't get into that category. And for most developers or most publishers, they look at this and say, yes, maybe we could ask for a little bit of money, but the advertisement we're getting out of it more than outweighs the money we would get from the views. So we see it as an investment. And actually, a lot of them pay YouTubers to talk about their games. So it's a completely different view of it. And I really don't think that for the bottom line, Nintendo's view is the right one. But
mm-hmm. yeah, I agree.
Final Fantasy Mobius. So that's a game I had, as I was saying, not really heard of before. I've heard it in passing mentioned here and there, but I didn't realize what it was. And this article about the sexiness of the main character alerted me to it. And, you know, being the egalitarian gender social justice warrior that I am, I clicked on the link. And so before I get into the game itself, which is really cool, or which seems like it could be pretty cool, mm-hmm. I'm going to get my quick rant out of the way. Basically, it was a presentation by Square Enix that happened a few days ago where it was an hour and a half or an hour presentation, and maybe 30 seconds of it were dedicated to that aspect where the main hero had one outfit where his sides were bare. So it was very revealing. It's a male character, and mm-hmm. it was very revealing. And they explained that after they first introduced the game, they got a lot of feedback and they reviewed the design and decided to make it less revealing. Mm-hmm. And people were, you know, the the people on the panel that was presenting it were sort of giggling, and the girl was hiding her eyes like, ooh, mm-hmm. it's really sexy, isn't it? And it was a little bit too much. We overdid it. And of course, you know, it was what struck me was the fact that in for a female character, they do, you know, Japanese designers mm-hmm. and Western designers, but especially Japanese designers, do a lot worse, quote unquote, worse for female character, and mm-hmm. no one bats an eye. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's completely accepted. So it was interesting that, you know, it's like, see, when people do it for a male character, it's weird. So mm-hmm. why is it not weird for a female character? And of course, I know why, but it was just interesting mm-hmm. to point out.
I'm looking at the picture they have of the character in this polygon piece. And I think it's hilarious.
Isn't it? But yeah. You know, the weird thing is that it does seem weird to me as well. It's like
yeah.
he has a, on his torso, the front is covered, but his entire side is it's almost, it's not, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like a monokini that has a side of it
yeah.
there or something. And it is definitely weird. It looks strange. And even to me, you know, it's not like I'm going to say, oh, this is how it should be. Or it just looks a bit strange. And it's funny how yeah. ingrained in our society it is that for the male character, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Whereas for female characters, it's like, it makes me feel, because I care about that issue, it's like, we mm-hmm. shouldn't do it. It's you know, it's disrespectful. Here it's like, whoa, what is this?
But yeah, it's really, to me, it seems like if you would ask someone that had never seen like a leotard or something, draw me a leotard, and that is what they'd make.
Wait, what's a leotard?
Like gymnastic people wear? Like those okay. skin, like Robin, I guess. Wears.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's I've just Googled it. It's a little bit like that, but even more revealing.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Yeah, it's funny. And actually, the guy is quite attractive. He's very muscular. He's very muscular.
I'd say he looks kind of. He looks very Japanese male, yeah. though. He looks almost androgynous.
Of course,
in his face, yeah.
And he's, you know, he's a Japanese Final Fantasy hero, so.
Yes.
But anyway, so after my initial, you know, social justice warrior shock, mm-hmm. I got into the video, and I got really interested because it is an RPG, a Final Fantasy, you know, they're all different, but it is a Final Fantasy title for mobile, specifically designed for mobile. And the first thing that struck me is the fact that they've designed it from the get-go to be used vertical as, you know, how do you call it, in portrait mode. So your phone is going to be used in portrait mode, not in landscape mode. And that already is like, that's genius.
It is, absolutely. I hate holding my phone landscape to play games.
it's you know, it's really a tiny thing where you're like, but why haven't we been doing this from the beginning? If yeah. you're going to make a game for mobile, then design it from the beginning for the way that you're using it on one hand when you're on the mm-hmm. subway or something. And so I thought that was pretty cool from the beginning. It has a job system. The people who play Final Fantasy will understand what that means. It's usually one of the systems that basically you can change, quote unquote, jobs, which are roles or classes, and you get the different abilities that go with it. Bravely Default was the one that brought this system from Final Fantasy III, mm-hmm. I think. It brought it back to the people's consciousness. And it's a very beautiful title. It looks amazing. It was shown on an iPhone 6 Plus and on an iPad Air 2. But they did say it would run on older hardware as well, and they demonstrated it. It's super beautiful. It's a command RPG. What they call a commander RPG. Basically, you do one touch to attack, and then you accumulate some sort of points, different types of points, like different colors, and you can use them to use your abilities that have special properties. So it's a very, the UI and the command scheme definitely look that they're designed with mobile very much from the get-go. So I have this sort of hope that this is going to be a core gamers game RPG on mobile that will be that could work and that could be a big game for core gamers on mobile. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'll play it because I'm not that big in I'm not that big into JRPGs. If I'm going to be completely honest, they just don't necessarily jive with the way I like to play my games. But I do like the idea, and hopefully this will show us like the kind of thing that we'll see from mobile games in the future, especially with like this will open up the door with what Nintendo wants to do with DNA and that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. It's sort of it's the first time that I've seen a game. How can I put it? It's the first time I've seen a mobile game where I've thought I've gotten the same kind of interest as I would for a regular game. So of course it's Final Fantasy and mm-hmm. again Final Fantasy is a series that has stumbled for a long time, so it's not like it's a guaranteed. It's not at its past glory by any means. It's not a guaranteed success or even quality title. But for this kind of game, from what we've seen, there's a lot more in the Japanese Twitch stream that they made. But from mm-hmm. what we've seen there, it looks like the kind of game that I could pay a hefty chunk of money for because yeah. it feels like a real game, right? It's not yeah. what we were saying earlier. It's not a Clash of Clans or that kind of silly little maintenance game.
It looks like a polished AAA game. Mm.
So if you haven't looked at it, go and check it out. Mobius Final Fantasy. In Japanese, it's in English, it's Mobius. In Japanese, it's actually Mevius. So you might get more videos with the Japanese version of the name. Mm-hmm. We don't have a release date. They were saying it would be out in the spring 2015, but they are delaying it because obviously it's now spring and it's not out. but it's, you know, it's I'm hopeful about this title. So let's see. YouTube might be relaunching its live streaming service, and they might be doing it in a way that would chase Twitch, which I'm very much welcoming of.
Yep, I will welcome competition in that market for sure.
Competition, and then I'd love for them to to re-engineer their live service because honestly, yes. it's kind of a mess. You have to
yeah.
create the event beforehand and then connect to it, and you can't just push a button and start streaming. So,
is there anything like that for streaming now? I mean, apart from Twitch, I can't think of anything that lets you live. Is Ustream still around?
Ustream is still around, but they have, I believe, for most users, you need a subscription.
Okay.
And you have other Twitch-like Twitch-like services. There's Hitbox.tv, there's GamingLive.something. There's a bunch of them, but none of them really is a serious competition. Of course, YouTube would have an instant giant footprint.
Yeah, I mean, just for things that aren't gaming, because obviously Twitch yeah. and Hitbox are for gaming only. Yeah, YouTube should get out there then, because that's a market that they should get into.
No, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it for games, but mm-hmm. also for other things, because
yeah.
You're right. There's no convenient streaming solution for anything that is not games. Because for Twitch, if you do something that's not gaming related, you can get reported and booted from the service. Mm-hmm. They're dedicated to gaming. So,
yeah.
Talking about streaming, OnLive is no more. OnLive was the first cloud gaming service that would stream the video of your games. It was at the time pretty groundbreaking technology. They've sold all assets and patents to Sony, who of course has been pushing its PlayStation Now service, to which they've just added Uncharted 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's out in beta, by the way, in the UK. Have you tried it? I know you don't have a PlayStation 4.
Not yet. No.
Do you have a PlayStation 3?
I do not.
Okay, you Luddite. Well, I guess you're a PC person, so
yeah,
it's the everyone else is a Luddite.
I honestly thought OnLive had gone away ages ago.
Well, the problem with OnLive was the fact that they couldn't get the deal to create a subscription service.
Yeah.
As we've seen with many instances, that kind of cloud gaming service is only viable because buying the games for something like this, they go away if the service ever disappears, you lose everything. As is the case for OnLive, by the way, the three people who still had data there are losing everything in about a month. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the same with what was it, NBA 2K14, which is shutting down its services, and all of the I can't remember which mode it is, but the special team mode or of whatever is disappearing with the servers getting shut down. So I think the only way, the only way it can work is if you have a subscription, but also it's a way it works great because it's an all-you-can-eat type of service. And of course, OnLive didn't work out because none of the publishers wanted to put their games on another platform because it wasn't big enough. It didn't have the oomph to convince them. Obviously, it's a very different story with Sony, and PlayStation Now could become a lot more successful. And I'm guessing that, I'd be surprised if it didn't hear an announcement about Microsoft doing something similar at E3. So,
I wonder if OnLive would have been more successful if the internet infrastructure in places like the US was better as well, though.
It's possible. I think the subscription is the key.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, but, what everyone wants is a Netflix for games. That's exactly what people want.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And that's PlayStation Now. So.
Yep.
Last piece of news before we dive into game announcements and delays that fill us with sorrow. There's for the first time a tipping of the scales for TV advertising for free-to-play games as opposed to regular console or even PC games. Meaning that the free-to-play games like Age of War and Clash of Clans are spending more money than traditional quote-unquote companies. And so I have thoughts about this. I think I could guess why that is, but I'm curious if you could, explain, if you have an explanation for this, because it is weird. It doesn't seem like the behemoths that have been around for 20 or 30 years are getting outspent on advertising.
So I will say that when I was home for the weekend, I saw maybe 10 adverts for Game of War and maybe 10 adverts for Clash of Clans on the TV, which is amazing. But I actually listened to a report. I don't remember who did it the other day, but a report which explained why this happens.
Oh, okay. So maybe you have the actual answer as opposed to my theory.
And so what it is that free-to-play games work off acquisition, user acquisition. So say you have 10 people. Say there's me, you, and then 8 other people, and I've played Clash of Clans and I've put in my $10 to get to where I want to be. Once I've spent that amount of money, I'm never going to spend that amount of money again. So they have to, but because they're free-to-play, they need to get those people in and get them addicted to the game. It's the same kind of way of getting people into casinos. You need to be constantly acquiring market share. So the first market they go for is obviously the iOS stores, and then they go for Facebook, and they go for YouTube, and then they need to get into different markets. This one we had the Liam Neeson Super Bowl
I like Smash Bowl.
I do too.
What was it? The Hotline Miami thing I did. Death Call Miami?
Yes.
Death Call Miami and Smash Bowl ads. I think that's brilliant.
So because people at the Super Bowl probably haven't played those free-to-play games, so they show them that advert. People that watch TV aren't playing those free-to-play games. They just need to get into every little market as possible. And because of the amount of money they make, I mean, I know that Clash of Clans makes millions of dollars. I mean, if you consider 300 people play it a day and they spend, say 300 people and they spend $10, that's $3,000 a day. And they're making no new content. They make so much money. They can afford massive adverts.
So it's, yeah, it, acquisition definitely makes sense. I think, so my theory was somewhat along the same lines. I was thinking that ads would work for those games because the type of people who play those games are people who aren't really interested in games to begin with.
Absolutely.
And that's the only way they're going to hear about it. And they're more, you know, they're more likely to look at the ad and just go and download it and not be informed about anything about the game.
Sure.
Whereas people who play more traditional core games are probably, first of all, they will have heard about it anyway, if it's that big. I don't think anyone who plays games has not heard about Clash of Clans or Age of War, and or Game of War, Fire Age, whatever it is. And which, by the way, the ad for Clash of Clans with Liam Neeson is brilliant. The one for Game of War is makes me want to pull my hair out.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's exploitative of everybody, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's really, we have a model and we're going to put it in front of your eyes and that's why you're going to go buy the game. At least, you know, the Liam Neeson thing, first of all, it's clever, it's funny.
Yeah.
And it sort of explains to you what the game is a little bit in a way that the Kate Upton one does not. But anyway, that's besides the point. So I think in this case, the people who play those games very casually are the ones who are going to be influenced by that TV ad. Whereas someone who's considering buying Mortal Kombat or Bloodborne, he's probably not going to be swayed because he saw an ad with Kate Upton. No. If he's going to buy it, there is going to be a reason for it, and that's not going to be it. So anyway.
Yeah.
Game announcements and delays. The first one, which is pretty big, and I don't think a lot of people will realize how big it is, it's the fact that Nintendo is going to be bringing Yo-Kai Watch to the West. And for those who don't know, Yo-Kai Watch is a sort of a Pokemon equivalent. And it's the biggest thing since Pokemon in Japan. It's sold more than anything you can think of. It's a 3DS title, and it's enormous. It's basically you have a watch and you navigate the world of ghosts and stuff like that, the Yo-Kai Watch. And it's enormous. And we've all been, those who are aware of this game, have all been waiting for the game to come to the West because it's so big, there's no way it's not going to. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's just, you know, it's just the announcement that Nintendo is going to do it and it's going to arrive at some point. I'm guessing it's a year away, but it's pretty big. It might be a major title to keep your eye on.
I hadn't heard of this at all, but this sounds, I'm reading the Wikipedia article and it sounds really cool. It sounds, yeah I would play this.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Pokemon, like, the thing is, I don't really like Pokemon, but again, it's one of, you know, we're so lucky in gaming. We have so many different types of, it's almost like food. It's almost like cuisine.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're like, this thing looks cool, and I've never tried the Nepalese type of food, and this, and the guys keep, you know, the people keep raving about, you know, the things they make in, I don't know, Venezuela, and I want to try this and this and this, and I want to like that thing, and so I want to try it. I want to have a good chance to try that, and Yo-Kai Watch is kind of this for Pokemon for me. I didn't get it. I was too old by the time Pokemon became popular, and when I've tried it now, it just seemed tame. So I want to, maybe Yo-Kai Watch is going to be better, and I might try it as well. So Bloodborne, we've talked about it. So you've never played Bloodborne. You're just playing now the since you don't have a PS4, you're playing now the Dark Souls, right?
I'm playing Dark Souls one right now, but if I was to pick up a PS4, Bloodborne would be why I would do it.
Oh, really? So you're liking it that much?
Yeah, and Bloodborne looks to fix the problems that I do have with Dark Souls, which are, you know, it seems a lot faster, a lot less punishing.
It definitely feels like they took away, they, you know, first of all, the first Dark Souls was very old. Guess the first one was Demon Souls, but...
Yes.
You know, it was really interesting, the story of that series. Demon Souls was created, I'm forgetting the name of the company,
It's From Software.
From Software, yes.
Yeah.
So they created Demon Souls initially for the PlayStation, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was Namco who swooped in and realized there was a potential there. And they said, do the same game, but for us on all platforms. Mm-hmm. And so that thus the Dark Souls series was born. Mm-hmm. And they did Dark Souls 1 and 2. And then Sony was like, dude, wait a second. That thing looks like it's getting some steam. Come back to us and do another game exclusively for PS4. And that's how Bloodborne was born. And so they're, From Software is basically making the same game for like three different companies. And you know, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the reviews are raving. It looks, there are a few issues, like the loading time are atrocious. Insane. Yeah. Especially for a game where you will die a lot. It's 30 to 40 seconds per load, which is pretty bad. But when you look at the review scores, as much as I dislike review scores, it's, you know, 9 out of 10 everywhere. So I'm going to get it, and we'll see if I come back to Pixels bloodied and sad and crying next time. We'll see. Guitar Hero is going to be unveiled on April 14, it seems. So just a week away.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Actually, you know, I mentioned Bloodborne would be the one that makes me buy a PS4. If Guitar Hero has exclusive content for a platform, that'll be what makes me decide what console I get.
Because, really?
Yeah, because I love Guitar Hero. I've played all of them. I've played every Rock Band. I want a new one, and that will be the one that is reviewing best on, will be what I design my new console on, I think.
Well, I'm fairly sure it's going to be similar on all consoles, unless, you know, you never know, maybe someone is going to pay for exclusive content. It's very possible.
I think, now I've said that, I think the ones that allow custom content best will be where I want to go.
It's very, you know, it's really weird that series, the rhythm games, only 6 months ago, if you had asked anyone, are you pining for a new rhythm game? Everyone would have gone like, oh, more plastic instruments. Are you kidding me? Never. I never want to see that again.
Yeah.
And after leaks and little, you know, stories from different developers and, you know, stories about Rock Band and Guitar Hero, people have realized that actually, I think everyone has turned around on this question. Everyone is like, you know what? I would play a Guitar Hero.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think people were saying they don't want one because they underestimated how much fun they were originally.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of having your four of your friends in a room, you're all singing your favorite songs, you know. I do think that it was kind of like that echo chamber of cynicism. It's like, oh, no one likes those plastic instruments, so I shouldn't either. I don't want to buy more. And then it just kind of spiraled into this rhythm game suck.
Mm.
But then the hype behind getting back into Guitar Hero. I mean, it's been, what, 5 years since the last one now?
A little bit less, I think. But definitely 5 years since it's been really popular.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years is a long time for people to come down off that huge oversaturation of the market and be like, hey, yeah, I do want to sit in my room and play Sweet Home Alabama to a computer screen now.
Yeah, I actually want to do exactly that.
Yep.
Batman Arkham Knight has been delayed another 3 weeks. It will be out on June 23rd, and I cannot wait.
No, me neither.
Ah, Batman, I mean, it's a really hard bet. The Arkham series has been, there's such bloat from a gameplay point of view. Mm-hmm. There's such bloat with a system that was brilliant to begin with. The combat system is both, you know, I've talked about this for Shadow of Mordor, which I fell back in love with a couple of months ago. And it was it's great on Shadow of Mordor. The thing is, with the Arkham series, it started as something fairly understandable, and with every game they added special moves and features and all of this, and now it's the fourth game with, you know, the weird cousin, the third one, the Origins, that we sort of push in a corner and don't really mention. I'm wondering how they're going to keep it fresh, keep the legacy of all the old ones, and still provide new things. It's a real challenge. So I'm really looking forward to it, but at the same time, I'm a little bit apprehensive. I know that they have this, you know, the Bat car. How's it called?
Batmobile.
Thank you.
I like Batmobile. Bat car, though.
We've created quite a few pretty cool custom names for things today.
Yeah.
So I really like the Bat car, but the idea of the Bat car, but I really hope that they're not just tacking this thing on the existing system and not changing anything else.
Yes. I will say that I think that the fact that it's been delayed, that there have been so many delays this year, is really good for the industry.
Yeah. It's people, you know, you were talking about cynicism about Plastic Instruments, which I agree. I think it overshadowed the fun you were actually having with the games. I think there's a lot of cynicism about, with last year, the catastrophic series of releases from last year have sort of led people to believe that developers were somewhat, well, not developers, but publishers, or that whole ecosystem was semi-evil, and that people didn't care about the quality of a game that was released. Of course, there are different developers with different, you know, agendas, and not even agendas, but they care to different levels about the quality of the game they will be released. No one wants to put out a game that completely sucks, but you'll have a different scale of adamantness that the game is perfect with developers. But even from a commercial point of view, at this point, no one really wants their game to be released and to be a disaster. So from that point of view alone, it means, I believe, that they're going to care about it a little bit more. And even beyond that, I think they actually don't want to put out a broken game for any reason. So this is sort of a testament to this whole thing. They've taken, the thing is, if a game comes out broken in September, you can't look at your release in October and think, oh, fuck, we're going to delay it, because there's too much riding into it at that point. But for the games from 2015, you might say, actually, let's get those right. So,
yeah.
Hopefully that's what will happen with Arkham Knight. And you're right, it's been delayed a couple of times. And even a three-week delay, it means we just need a little bit more time to polish it and make it great. It's not, you know, changing game systems at this point. But
no, it's bugs, and it's making sure that it's optimized. It's making sure it's going to run well. It's good.
So, Halo 5, we have a release date. October 27th. There are a couple of live action trailers where you see basically Master Chief and another Spartan. The two alternate versions of the trailers, where in one, Master Chief is coming to the downed Spartan and says something like, oh, I never thought it would ever come to this, and shoots him in the face or something. And the other one is reversed. The other Spartan comes to the downed Master Chief and says, oh, I can't believe you betrayed us and killed us all. And the hashtag for that campaign is Hunt the Truth. And I really hope there's a story element to all of this, and that I'm going to be able to dive into that world of Halo that I've never known. And I'm thinking, once I finally buy an Xbox One, which I will buy, I'm going to get the Master Chief Collection, and I hope I get sucked into that universe. And I think I'm sort of delusional, and everyone has been telling me there's no story in this game. There is, but it's kind of
Is there? Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the Halo story is fantastic.
Is it not like... The frustrating. We tell you a little bit, you know, again, the last thing, like we tell you a little bit and then nothing comes out of it.
So I've only played the first three. I haven't played four or, actually, no, that's a lie. I've played 1, 2, 3. I've played a lot of them. I only haven't played four. Now I think about it. It's all there. I mean, it's definitely, if you think about it, like in the same way that Star Wars is, you have the main product and you have the books around it. But Halo 1, 2, and 3 for sure have a distinct beginning and end story, and they're very, very good games.
Okay, well, you're giving me hope again.
Yeah, I mean, I play through Halo 1 every year for the story, yeah, and it's fantastic.
You play through Halo 1 every year?
Every year, in May. I don't know why May, but I play through Halo 1 once a year.
Okay, well, it's coming up. You know what would be perfect? Getting an Xbox One with the Master Chief Collection this
year. Yeah, I want to, but I want to
but
make
then again,
sure
you're
it works
a student.
First. Yeah, and there's also that, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear. What did you?
I want to make sure the Master Chief Collection works fully before I buy it.
Well, in that case, you're going to wait for about a year, I think. So
I could do that.
Fair enough. Quantum Break, the new game by Remedy, is also delayed to 2016. So that game was introduced as, you know, in the Xbox One presentation at E3 a couple of years ago, I think. It's one of the big ones, and they're delaying it as well. And the other thing is The Legend of Zelda Wii U, despite assurances that we've had on numerous occasions that it would come out in 2015, it's also being delayed because Aonuma made a video apologizing to everyone, saying, "We're sorry, we've realized with the scope of the game, with the open worldliness of it, that there are things we can do in a Zelda title, and we really want to make it the best we can and explore those gameplay opportunities as much as we can. So we're delaying it. We don't have a date. We're going to be skipping E3. It feels like it's going to get delayed maybe to, I could see a holiday 2016 and maybe even later. And again, I think it's, if we hadn't had the disastrous holiday season last week, it's a thing that people would have been up in arms about. But now everyone's like, oh, okay, fine, delay it. Just make it good. I'm fine with it.
The only thing about that is I've no idea what's going to come between. Oh, I mean, I guess they're going to have to announce stuff at E3 because there's nothing between Yoshi's Woolly World and Zelda now.
It's definitely a tough spot. I mean, there is Star Fox coming out at some point in, you know, late summer, I believe. They might delay that to be their big holiday title. But you know, I think it's also, I don't think that anyone that would buy a Wii U for Zelda hasn't already bought it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
There are going to be a few people, obviously, but it's not like it's going to change the tide for the Wii U. I think there might have been a discussion in the Nintendo offices thinking, you know, saying, you know, whether we put it out in end 2015 or end 2016, it's not like we're going to save the Wii U. So let's just do the right thing, as they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
There is one question, though. A lot of people are wondering if it's going to be a Twilight Princess type of deal, where it was initially planned for the GameCube and got delayed so much it ended up coming on GameCube and Wii. And that's a really tough question. It might, you know, it might come out in the end on both consoles. You know, the next console, the NX, whatever it ends up being, possibly, but
I was wondering if they were going to do something with, like they did with Twilight Princess, where it came out on both the GameCube and the Wii.
Yeah, exactly.
But then I don't think the Wii U is old enough for that to happen yet. I don't think they would do that. I mean, think about the bad will they would get from people that bought a Wii U.
Well, the thing is, the Wii U is beyond saving at this point. It's, you know, they have to come out with a new system.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the NX, you know, even come out on holiday 2016. It's 2 years away from, you know, it's a little bit under a couple of years away. I don't know how long they can keep the Wii U humming. And you know, when did it come out? It's been a while.
2012, Christmas 2012.
Right. So 2016 would be 4 years.
That's true.
It's a short life cycle for a generation for a console, but it's not up in arms short.
I guess that's how long the GameCube lasted, really, isn't it?
I suppose so, yeah. More or less. And yeah. And you know, it's not like we were starred for games on Wii U. We've had all the big titles. Maybe
that's true.
You know, Zelda will come out on both. I could see it happening. I could also, depending on what that NX ends up being, I could also see it not happen. But I don't know. And the last thought I had that I wanted to mention on this show was how strong the Xbox seems to be now. How strong of a position it seems to be in for holiday 2015 if nothing new is announced at E3 for the other manufacturers, because Zelda has been delayed, Uncharted has been delayed, we've heard, and sure, there are, you know, other titles. There's Star Fox on the Wii U, but that's not even a contender anyway. Mostly there's No Man's Sky on the PlayStation 4, which is an exclusive. And maybe they're going to announce other things at E3. It's very possible. But it would need to be pretty big. And I don't see something big enough coming out of the woodwork to put the PS4 on a stronger position compared to the Xbox. Because the Xbox has... Tomb Raider, which is an exclusive, and it's, by the way, the reboot was the biggest selling title in the franchise, in the Tomb Raider franchise, which is pretty big to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it is a strong contender. And they also have Halo, obviously, which is we just talked about. The Xbox seems like, if nothing changes, which it might, but it seems like it's in a great place to win the holiday season, especially... we've heard rumors of a slim version being announced at E3.
That'd be
so
cool.
So I think a lot of people, myself included, now I'm definitely going to wait for E3 to see if they announce it.
Sure,
and
yeah.
If they do, that's just automatic, okay, I'm getting it now. You know, a slimmed version, if they can remove the horrible power brick and the gigantic... noisy machine. It's not as noisy as the Xbox 360, but the power brick alone is a deterrent to buying the machine. So,
yeah.
Slim version, it would be the click that would make me buy it instantly.
Yeah, this does seem like the year of the X, or this does seem like the holiday season of the Xbox. I mean, you mentioned what Tomb Raider sold. It looks like Tomb Raider sold 8.5 million copies, which is insane.
Yeah, it's pretty big for a you know, it's definitely a big game. And I remember Square Enix was kind of saying, we're disappointed about console sales a while ago, which in a quarter that included Tomb Raider. But I guess it lived on word of mouth, and it ended up, since it was such an excellent game, it ended up selling pretty well on the long tail. And,
yeah. Although I do guess it did have two releases as well.
I guess so, yeah, you're right. There was the definitive edition on the new generation. But it's not the only game that had that.
No, that's very true.
And I think it's gained... you know, usually when you get games that really explode, new IPs that really explode, they usually explode by the second game.
That's true.
The second iteration. The first games are usually setting up the concepts and getting people familiar with the IP and with the type of game. And the second game is a refinement of that concept of the gameplay elements, although arguably Tomb Raider is really just Uncharted, but, you know, still. And they refine it, they make it an excellent version of that first draft, and they have the goodwill and awareness of that initial, you know, that first release. And the people who bought it and enjoyed it, and that's a lot of people in this case, are coming back for more. And the people who didn't get on the train of the first one, it's often think, you know what, I'm going to give it a try with the second one, and sometimes even buy the first one as well, but I'm going to give it a try with the second one, get on that train, see how good it is. Of course, it depends on the quality of that second game. if it manages to iterate and improve on that first one, it can create a really strong title. And that's what I'm hoping for. Did you play the first one?
I loved it.
It's, are you an Uncharted fan?
I played Uncharted 1. I didn't play the other two. I would say it's okay.
So, see, that's the same thing. Uncharted 1 was that it was a good game, but it was a first draft kind of situation.
Yeah, I've heard Uncharted 2 is the best one for sure.
Spectacular. I mean, I don't know how it's aged, but Uncharted 2 was at the time, when was it, 2009, I think?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I mean, there are some mind-blowing action scenes in that game, and it's just so well acted, and so, I love that game to bits. Anyway, and you know, Tomb Raider was so silly at times, and so the story was really convoluted and kind of dumb, and there was some silly moments, but it just left me with a great feeling of I don't know. I loved it, so.
Yeah.
And I guess that is going to be it for our show. That's a show. That's a wrap.
I think I have one small little story.
Oh, please go ahead.
About a game announcement, which is coming up on the 17th.
Okay.
They're supposed to be showing Star Wars Battlefront at Star Wars Celebration this year.
Yeah, I haven't really been following Star Wars Battlefront. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, and I'm not a Battlefield fan, but it could be, I don't know. Why is it a big deal for you? Because Star Wars.
Oh, man. Star Wars Battlefront is probably the game I put most into when I was young. The fact that there hasn't been one for so long and that it just feels so... I'm just really excited for it. I know I shouldn't be, because I don't really think EA does very many... I don't really like what EA does, and Battlefield's... while I enjoy Battlefield, it's okay, but for some reason, just the whole hype machine around it has really started like getting me excited. I'm really excited for it.
So how is it different from a, you know, it's not just a Battlefield with a Star Wars skin on it?
Oh, it is. That's basically what it is.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, Battlefront 2 had modes where you played as heroes as well. So you play as Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker, or like super high scale space battles where you were flying X-Wings and attacking Star Destroyers. It just, you know, it's large scale Star Wars battles. Where you're not playing as a Jedi, which is what you're always doing in a Star Wars game.
Mm. So it's basically the spirit of Battlefield with the large-scale fights and Warzone type things, maps. And I guess you get the, like, is it Hoth? That's the snow planet?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, with the what is it? AT-AT?
80s, yeah. So you like get to be boots on the ground in the Battle of Hoth, and it feels really immense and awesome.
Mm.
I'm excited for this unveiling for sure.
I guess I could be excited, but I'm waiting for reports to tell me that it's cool because I never played the one before, so the previous version. So that's going to be at a Star Wars convention on the 17th. So
yes.
If you're excited about that, we'll have reports for you on the next show, but I'm sure you'll hear a lot about it before that. All right, cool. Thank you very much, James.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That is going to be it for us. Before we leave, James, can you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me at @iyagovos on Twitter. That is @iyagovos. And at www.indie-love.com, which is my indie game site.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. For me, it's NotPatrick on Twitter. And you can also find the show on the website frenchspin.com. You'll find another show there, which you might enjoy. And if you are so inclined, if you enjoy the show, if you could please take a couple of minutes and comment the podcast, put a comment and a rating on the podcast on iTunes. We're sort of a young show still, and we're growing, and I think it would be pretty cool if we could get a little bit more visibility, and one of the best ways of doing that is to get comments on iTunes still, even though it doesn't have the visibility that... It used to have the iTunes Store back in the day. A couple of comments I'd like to mention here. The first one is one from Rogue Hunter that says, "Patrick talks too much." And it's a little bit old. It's from December last year. And I just wanted to say I've gotten that piece of feedback from more than one person. And I've tried to address it, and I took it at heart. I don't just take, you know, random feedback from random people so seriously. But I've heard this from more than one person, and I think I've really tried to correct that behavior. I sort of realize it myself. I have a tendency to overtake the entire show and not let anyone talk. And part of it is because I try to always explain everything about the topic before we discuss it. So Obviously that takes a little bit more time, right?
Yeah, you're the anchor. You can't not explain stories, yeah. And that's the big part of doing a new show. You sure. have to have the anchor explain the stories.
And especially because my show, I usually try to make them accessible for even people who haven't been following those stories. So that's part of it. But definitely, I was eating up everyone else's talking space. So I've really tried to address that issue. So I hope, Rogue Hunter, you've now, you know, you were somewhat satisfied with my new entering style. Yeah. But it was very valuable feedback. So thank you very much for that. And if you're still listening to the show, if you can come and put a comment on the website on frenchspin.com to let me know if you think I've improved, I would very much appreciate it. There's someone who dropped my show because I made a comment on the Tea Party on another show about three or four months ago. It was a comment made, you know, backhandedly, and I've since apologized for it. But it was funny that someone would go to the length of actually comment on iTunes to say that he would drop my show because of a comment. Anyway, it was fun, but you know, it's you're right. All more power to you. It's fine. But then we also have a couple of pretty good comments. Elon DPT says, "Really enjoy the educated insight. Thanks, Patrick, for the inside look on the video game industry. Have enjoyed you on both The Instance and Overwatchers, so chose to check out this show and was not let down." And Death Mom Lover, there's some goth theme going there, I think. I'm thinking it makes me think of Death Cab for Cutie. He says, "Fantastic," he or she says, "fantastic. Very cool, intelligent look into gaming news with a French accent. I really, 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 really like it." Thank you very much, Death Mom Lover. There's a few other there. Thank you very much for that, for those comments. I really try and bring as I was saying at the beginning of the show, try to bring a sort of look from the inside, or at least around the industry, with a little bit of analysis of the news, reaching behind the news, as we said at the beginning of the show. And it's very cool to see that people are digging that aspect of it. So as I was saying, very much a young show still. We're trying to find our footing and exactly what works and doesn't, and we'll keep improving the show. So again, if you think it's worth it, a comment or a rating on the iTunes Store or somewhere else would go a long way. So thank you very much for that. Thank you very much, James, for participating in the show and dealing with my incessant blabbering.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed doing this show. I really enjoyed talking games with you, Patrick. Thank you so much for being me on. I had a lot of fun.
And we'll do it again soon. And for everyone else, we will be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.